And so it's like, if you could capture those appointment slots in the moment and use them for patients, you wouldn't keep booking people out 3 months and you wouldn't have people calling for triage. And it's just like kind of making a cyclical issue of like a catch 22 versus going for the root cause.
This is the Coleman Associate Innovation Podcast.
Innovation?
Yeah, innovation. New, original, and creative. This podcast is designed to challenge the way you think about how healthcare is delivered.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please take your seat and fasten your seatbelt.
Welcome to the Coleman Associates Innovation Podcast, the podcast that brings innovations and best practices in healthcare to your podcasting app. I'm Adrian, your host. I'm excited about our topic today because we're going to be talking about something that often comes up in the work that we do at Coleman Associates, which is triage. So, you know, triage is a little bit of a dirty word around Coleman Associates, and we'll talk about why, but just a little bit of history about what triage is, and it has a long history. Some of the evidence of triage goes back to the 1400s, but most people credit Napoleon's surgeon in chief in the 1800s, his name was Baron Dominique Jean Leray, with actually formalizing what we consider modern triage. And really what it is it's this idea of battlefield medicine for how you prioritize who gets limited resources. And so I think anybody who has been in a health profession program or even done some community volunteering in certain roles has probably heard of triage. And I'm excited to talk about it with Amanda and with Sheree today. So I think you all know both Amanda and Sheree, but just in case, Amanda is our chief operations officer here at Coleman Associates, and she has a background in answering phones at a health center after she did fundraising before that, being an MA and then being a clinic manager. And Sheree has background in being a nurse and worked her way up through the health center also. And whenever she left her health center, she was the COO. So they definitely have experience in this area, and I'm looking forward to discussing this. So before we really dive into kind of how Coleman Associates thinks about triage, which I know that we tend to have pretty strong opinions on it, I'm curious, whenever you two go into health centers, what do you tend to see if you see triage?
So what I tend to see when I go into health centers are nurses that are doing this either at a computer. Well, it's always at a computer. They're like always sitting at a computer. And sometimes they're at a computer and going in and out to like see patients who are there. But more often than not, I'm seeing them sit at a computer going through like a list of patients through their EMR's inbox of like patients who need things and want to be seen and can't get seen. And they're just like picking their way through them, making calls, returning phone calls, you know, returning messages coming from their portal, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I've also seen examples of they're sitting essentially, there's a layer between, an additional layer, I guess, between them and the patients where they might even be fielding voicemails, where they're going through a queue of voicemails and trying to call patients back and not necessarily answering the phone in real time.
Yeah, I would agree. Is what I tend to see is the voicemail situation or phone call situation. We have been in some health centers where the nurses are more on the floor providing triage to patients that are walking in. But I think it's not at all like how I was trained in nursing school. Like if you're in the emergency department and you're getting overwhelmed or even just like in the emergency department, like how fast do you need to bring that patient back? Kind of an idea, right? Is it almost always falls into that category of we don't have enough capacity to see these patients. So our nurse is working on trying to figure out who needs to be seen the most. And that can often look like, honestly, a nurse begging somebody to see the patient. I don't know if that's how you would characterize it too, Amanda and Sheree.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's too bad. I mean, you know, COVID happened because, I mean, for a lot of reasons. But in this realm, I saw that what we described of common triage things like being more minimized, and then COVID happened. And we needed to have triage much more because it was like deciding who could enter the building or who had to be seen in the car or evaluating symptoms and like breathing, like respiratory treatments and where they need to go to the ER. And like that was very pertinent. And like, I don't know what the right, like it was very needed during COVID in the beginning, especially. And that in my opinion, since I've been at health centers post-COVID, I've seen more triage than I saw pre-COVID. And it's like, it brought it roaring back.
I completely agree with that. And to be clear to our listeners is like, triage during COVID was absolutely necessary for all the reasons that you said, Amanda. It just gave it this foothold in like ways that it does not need to be used in health centers that I had really hoped was going by the wayside.
Absolutely. No, I didn't think it shouldn't be there anyway during COVID. It just meant exactly that. It was like, there's a reason for it again. And now we have to start picking away at it again in our like post-COVID world.
Yeah. And I'm curious from your all's perspective is, I think the question might be, you know, Coleman Associates, you don't give clinical advice, which we don't. But why does this matter from an operational perspective if an organization has a triage program versus not?
Yeah, I'll start on that one. I would say the biggest thing that we need to think about in that space is just really thinking about how our resources are used and specifically nursing staff, right? They are in a triage world, nurses are an untapped resource. And when we're really thinking about advancing the health of our community, there are lots of ways that nurses can be leveraged to do exactly that. And when they're stuck behind a phone or stuck behind a desk and looking at a computer and trying to navigate the access challenges organizations have, it really limits their ability to make that huge impact on that patient that, you know, maybe has uncontrolled diabetes or other uncontrolled chronic conditions where they can really have a big impact and improve health outcomes.
Yeah. I mean, I would just add that to me, organizationally, if you have a lot of nurses doing triage or just triage happening in general, it's like, what's the root cause of that? Why aren't those patients just coming in for visits in most cases? I mean, you know, if a patient doesn't need that level of care with the provider, okay, that's one thing. But in a lot of these instances, when I look over the shoulder of nurses of what the patients need help with, it's like, well, they're trying to get in this way because they couldn't get in the like easy way, which is calling to make an appointment. Either they were on hold too long, or very often it's no, the next available is 3 months out. And so they're like, I need med refills. And then, or they're like, or, you know, our smart patients, all of them are smart, are like, I couldn't get in saying that I need my med refilled, but I know I could get in if I complain about this issue. And so I'm going to say there's this issue to get through the gates, you know, the gatekeepers, which is often like the role nurses are playing. And so my point is if you have a lot of triage, it's because your root issue is you have an access problem. And, you know, most people think, oh, the only way I can solve the access problem is if I hired a bunch more providers, you know, if I had a bunch more people seeing patients. And so nurses are a way to like put a Band-Aid on that. But it doesn't always mean you need a lot more providers. Let's look at how many slots go unused every day for each of your providers. I mean, I was at an organization a few weeks ago who said, on average, every week we have 27 slots go unused. Actually, I think that was per day. I think it was per day. 27 slots go unused, which was more than one more provider working that day. And so, and they have an access issue. They're booking out. Their next available is really high. And so it's like, if you could capture those appointment slots in the moment and use them for patients, you wouldn't keep booking people out 3 months and you wouldn't have people calling for triage. And it's just like kind of making a cyclical issue of like a catch 22 versus going for the root cause.
Yeah. Anything you'd add, Sheree?
I've seen similar examples and even going so far as, you know, really thinking about COVID and how our process has changed with that and still seeing some of those same processes in place within an organization. So we've been to a couple of clinics recently where a patient had to talk to triage before they could get that same day appointment. And so it actually made the situation worse because of the gatekeeper, right? Nursing staff was a gatekeeper for patients to get to that next appointment, but the nursing staff wasn't able to get through all of those phone calls. And so those appointments, those same day appointments were going by unused, waiting until the next nurse was available. And so back to Amanda's point, it just gets back to that root cause and how do you dive into that and figure out what your root cause is of the access challenge.
Yeah. And so to me, the two big things that I think we talked a little bit about each of these is one is triage is almost always a symptom of a poor access problem, except for if you're in the height of COVID. And then the other thing is that cyclical nature of it, which is triage often makes you feel more short-staffed because you're putting really expensive, dedicated resources to figure out how to keep patients out instead of using them to help care for patients. So I want to dive in and talk a little bit about, I guess if I was somebody who was listening, my question would be twofold, which is, okay, what do you do instead of triage? And then two, how do I start that? Because triage can be, Amanda, I'm thinking of that organization that you and I worked with in Colorado, where it can be like foundational to how the organization is operating, and kind of pulling up those triage routes can be really challenging. And so from your all's perspective, what do you replace triage with?
Well, I don't know if you replace it right away. You have to slowly like put it out of business, is what I would say. Meaning like if I were just to go into that organization you talked about and say, nope, we're not doing triage anymore. Like we're going to take those nurses and just put them on the floor. It would be like, where, you know, all those patients have gotten used to, this is a way to get a hold of them. And so what you start doing is looking at how you utilize appointment slots you have today for patients versus let them go to the status of a missed opportunity. It's like thinking of an appointment slot like a perishable banana. I think Melissa always says this, like appointment slots are perishable. It's like fruit going bad, you know, at the grocery store is like once it's, you know, ripe, you can't sell it. You got to throw it away and it's waste. And that's what happens to a slot is as soon as we can't use it for someone else, we've wasted that opportunity when we have everyone here to see patients and now we can't use it. And the patient calls and we're like, okay, yeah, we're booking out till 3 months from now. And it's like, well, what about that one today? And it's hard. I mean, most people say, well, how do I use that appointment slot in real time? Because we don't know if that person's not coming. And then, you know, we can't use it in time. And I was at a health center last week where because the triage nurse was trying to figure out if a patient could be used, the 10-minute conversation to figure out if we could use that appointment slot, we could have already seen the patient. And, you know, and we lost it. And there was only 5 minutes left of the appointment and we can't fit and squeeze an appointment in anymore with 5 minutes left, right? And so you have to start reducing missed opportunities through, you know, making sure your no-show rate is as low as possible that you can get it by confirming your appointments. And then for those patients who still no-show, like knowing ahead of time if they're going to come or not, and start like doing a pull. Like I like to think of it as triage is like kind of a push out, like pushing patients out. And what you need to get to is a pulling patients in, like having hands that are grabbing patients of like, can I find them here and pull them in? Hey, do you want this appointment? Or like, you know, through the portal, well, we could see you today. And if you have that like outreach of pull, that's what starts to whittle down your third next available and start to make openings to see patients today, where maybe then you need less triage nurse functioning and you can look at your data and see, well, what does your voicemail say now? Or what does your inbox say now? And can we make that list shorter to then start saying, well, what if I pull that triage nurse off of that desk for X amount of hours because now we're like making more of a pull and have fewer missed opportunities.
I mean, Amanda, I totally agree of like this, you know, and it really comes back to some of the fundamentals that we've talked about on this podcast before, right? Of things that are simple, like robust confirmations, like jocking the schedule, like simplified patient schedule, because you can't just go into an organization and get rid of triage if you don't have some of the fundamental systems to make things work in terms of seeing low no-show rates, low missed opportunities. And I'd say the other phrase that we sometimes talk about is like, just say yes to patients, which comes into the simplified scheduling, right? But just like, if a patient walks in today, like give your front desk staff or whoever like is the first person that they talk to permission to just put them on the schedule in an open spot. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, and my guess is that there's a lot of operations folks who are like, well, obviously that's what we do. But we often see like, if you actually get into the nitty gritty of it, that is not as simple as it sounds. What's your reaction to that?
So what I was just thinking of when you said that, Adrian, was I'm coaching one team right now who has like same day access and like they have urgent care providers on site.
Oh my gosh, it drives me nuts whenever people start to have urgent care providers because it's the same problem as triage.
Exactly. And I was just saying like what I've been coaching them to do is what exactly we were just talking about with triage, which is to like slowly put them out of business. And when I say that, I don't mean like, hey, sorry, that provider doesn't have any job anymore seeing patients. No, like give them a schedule of patients who are going to be their patients and they get like impaneled and they become a PCP and put them out of the business of urgent care only, because people who do same day, like, are just doing a bunch of like acute stuff. And the providers over there who don't have those patients are seeing a bunch of complex stuff. And they're like, I need a few acutes to like even it out. And that's kind of what's happening with triage, is like those acute, like kind of even out the load or have some visits. If they're their patients, like, I want to see my doctor if I have a sore throat. I don't want to talk to a nurse or go somewhere else. I want to see my person. And so how do we get them to see their person, whether it's a same day provider or a triage nurse?
So one of the really practical tactics that is so simple that I know, Amanda, you and Sheree, you and I, we often do this on site. Sheree, I'm thinking about that clinic we worked with in Indiana where this like absolutely flipped a switch. I think we did it like the week after in a clinic in New York too. But what we do is just count the number of missed opportunities at the end of the day and make sure everybody knows how many there were. Right. And this is like super simple. You just look at the schedule, you see how many holes there are at the end of the day. Right. But like, I swear to you, it's so common to see missed opportunities that I am deeply uncomfortable with. Like, it's not uncommon for us. I was looking at our baseline data for some of the folks that have been going through our cohort recently. And it's not uncommon for folks to start with like 5 missed opportunities per 4-hour session per provider, which is huge. Right. That's a very not out of the realm of possibility baseline data that we see. And so, Sheree, I'm thinking about in Indiana, what we did is we would have the leaders report out on the number of missed opportunities that happened that day. And because I think the staff knows it, especially frontline staff, like they see it go by and it's painful. And a lot of times the reasons that they go by are, it's an emergency department follow-up, but it's today we didn't have an emergency department follow-up to put in there, right? Or people are unclear on like, okay, if this is a same day, honestly, sometimes same days are so restricted that folks are like, well, I don't have the perfect patient with the perfect symptoms to put in there, so I'm not going to put a patient in there, kind of a thing, right? And watching those missed opportunities go by and raising awareness about it is huge. I think that makes a really big difference. Also, make sure if you have same day providers or an urgent care system or something like that in your health center, go through and specifically, or walk-in providers. Walk-in providers are big ones too. Go in and count how many missed opportunities are happening in those clinics, because it's often very feast or famine. You know, I've gone into clinics where that provider ends up seeing 1 or 2 patients for the entire day. And then there's other days where it is actually filled up. But like, if you're not thinking about how you build these things strategically, then you can watch those missed opportunities just like go out the door. And then it reinforces these systems that aren't working. What would you add, Sheree?
Yeah, I love that you bring that up and specifically bringing it back to the data, because I think that, you know, clinic days can feel really busy, and they are, right? They're very busy, but I think that we lose sight of how many patients we could have seen. And so, you know, at the same time, these missed opportunities are happening while patients are also, you know, calling these triage nurses or calling scheduling and trying to figure out how to get their medications refilled when they only have 3 days left, but your third next available, the next time that patient can actually be seen, can be 6 weeks plus out. And suddenly you have a triage nurse situation, right? Because how do they manage the patient that is about to run out of their medication? And so you're right, take it back to the data and that focus on access and creating access and eliminating.
I was just pulling data from a place that had urgent care. And I know I don't mean to conflate it entirely with triage, but just as an example, it was an organization, it was a big clinic, and we were there helping them by doing this look-see. And they had a ton of providers at the site. And you're going to know that when I tell you this number. They had 79 missed opportunities amongst those providers, 2 days, 79. And on one of those days, they also had an urgent care clinic that was associated with them. And 12 patients were seen at urgent care that Tuesday with 4 providers. And they had never looked at that data in that way before. And so when they did, yeah, it was wild. And they were like, oh my gosh, this is what we need to be looking at, because we have 4 people over there with staff, with resources, and yet we have 79 appointments go unused. Like, maybe we need to change seasonally how many, you know, urgent care providers we have. And like, well, I don't think we need triage in that case. Like, we have more than enough access. So it's how you look at the data.
Yeah. And I want to be clear, putting in those systems that decrease missed opportunities, it's not like the tactics are pretty simple, but obviously rolling those things out can be tricky. And like I mentioned, we go into really deep dives in some of our early podcast episodes about that. But I would also say that, like, honestly, like, I think that we provide at Coleman Associates some really good expertise, but you can do that missed opportunity trick yourself. Like, go and count the missed opportunities and tell people about it. And it makes a huge difference. And I just wanted to also mention that a lot of this ties into tactical nursing, which we've talked about on a recent podcast episode. About what we're talking about is not just like the folks in the back being, you know, shoved more patients on them. It's like, move your resources so that the folks who are currently answering voicemails or something that is much below their clinical skills can actually provide assistance on the floor. And that could look like, you know, if you have one nurse that's doing triage, like, put that one nurse with your busiest provider in addition to their medical assistant and see what happens instead, right? And things like that, that can really start pulling nurses into a different role. Because to your point, Amanda, we're not talking about firing people. It's talking about, like, let's look at our big staffing grid and let's see where we could rethink how we're using staff to make this much more effective for patients and for staff. So we talked a little bit about how to dismantle triage and how to start that, because it really is like a strategic dismantling of triage. Can you all give us any examples of times that you've seen folks work on this triage problem and kind of what happened?
Yeah. So the one I have was from a clinic in Colorado, and they had a system where anyone who wasn't pre-scheduled, because they didn't have a lot of openings in that day, had to see triage first. And so what they started to do was say, okay, you know, we're going to make sure we get our no-show rate down, and then we're going to work in these patients if we have a slot to see them and just schedule them and get them upstairs, because they had two floors, get them upstairs, see the provider and not have to go through the nurse first. And they just put them in the schedule. But then they said, well, you know, we don't always have the openings. So what do we do then? And then we looked at their no-show rate. And because they were serving a primarily like unhoused population, they found that their no-show rate never got below a certain level. So then they started thinking about, okay, and we were coaching them on how to plan for the expected when it came to how many no-shows they were going to have. And so we helped them set up something called a ghost schedule, where they built it based off of how many no-shows they knew they were going to have, because they could never get it below a certain threshold. And it was something like one per hour per the clinic. And so they built this ghost schedule, and they said, you know, this is the schedule like hiding behind the scenes, where we'll just put them on there. And we know between these few providers who are seeing patients, we're going to move this patient over from the ghost schedule, kind of like a wait list, but that was structured, to move them into the slot. And we know we're going to see them around this time. And so it still prevented the nurse from having to go see them and do a visit, as if maybe they won't see a provider. And it was like, no, we know this, they're going to see a provider. And that way they got rid of how many nurses were doing triage and only saved them when like that system was full. And it ended up like cutting down how many people were doing that job of triage, so that it was way less and they were getting more into the schedule.
Those nurses that used to do triage, what did they do then, Amanda?
They started working on the floor to help the team. So they ended up functioning in more of a tactical nurse role, where like they might help with a patient who did have a complicated med reconciliation or needed diabetic counseling or like needed some education, and they would help make the visit run smoothly. But it wasn't for the purpose that was triage of, should we see this patient today? It was, how can I help you see this patient today? Which made a big difference. And it was much nicer for the patient, because they weren't like trying to get all their symptoms past the gate of like, what do I have to say to get seen and get what I need and get, you know, the diagnosis or the medication or the thing that only a provider could do. Instead, the nurse was playing a much bigger supportive role. And then the patient walked out with what they needed.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, Amanda, about that example, which I referenced earlier. It was whenever I was a pretty new CHISPA. And I think it was probably one of the most impactful things in my career. And I know you worked with them for like months afterwards, but like, it was that
It was the fourth day that we were there, and we came, and it always started with a line out the door of folks at 7 a.m. And people would really like line up at like 6 o'clock or 6:30 to make sure that they got an appointment, because that was really the only time that you could functionally get an appointment, is if you were early in line there. And I remember we went and got in line at on the fourth day in the morning at 7 a.m. And there were like maybe six people in line, which was a huge difference. And there wasn't anybody who got turned away for care that day. And I'll just never forget that, of like how quick of an impact you can make on patients through this. It definitely wasn't easy and it was a lot of work, but I think that's a really, it was for me a very powerful example of like what you can do.
Adrienne, that story we were just telling in Colorado jogged my mind to another story in Northern California, where, you know, you were saying in a matter of 4 days, every patient got accommodated. This other organization had a very similar thing where a nurse kept coming in earlier and earlier to work through the line because they dealt with a primarily migrant farm worker population of patients. And so this lovely nurse would come in every day to do a very in-person triage. And frankly, it was in-person because this was a number of years ago before like you could do as much through, you know, portals and receive messages or whatever. And their patients would come out, like be in a line around the block of their clinic. And he'd come in earlier and earlier and pick through them and work out who, like what they could do to try to accommodate them that day. And they found in a matter of like 2 weeks when they were doing this, that line disappeared and they couldn't fill their schedule anymore. They were like, where did all of our patients go? And they realized that when they just started saying yes and accepting people, that their demand was not what they thought it was, because the demand every day was like double what it seemed, because their patients were calling multiple times or they were standing in line both days because they didn't make it the day before. And so there really is this like myth that we have this insatiable demand. And it is amazing how quick you can work through that when you just start saying yes to people.
And to be clear, we're not talking about then those clinics closed because there's no patients to be seen. Like, we all got into community health so we could outreach those folks who are due for pap smears and mammos and making sure folks get colonoscopy and follow up on their diabetes. Like, there's people to see. It just totally shapes the way, it changes the perspective of how you're viewing who you're going to see as patients. Sheree, do you want to talk about your experience in Washington?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, kind of a similar story in that clinic had a huge demand for walk-in. And really, they had designed their processes that way. They had patients walking in every single day. And so what we found in that clinic was a couple of levels of triage. Sometimes patients would call and there would be one nurse or a couple of nurses that were on the phones doing triage. And then if a patient walked in, there would be another nurse assigned every day to manage triage. And so it's like all of these levels of ultimately just how do we get patients in the door and get them to be seen? And so what we did in that clinic was set the front desk up with a just say yes policy. Essentially, rather than having to go through triage and then figure out who was going to see that patient and sometimes beg to see that patient, the front desk would use their slots. They would use their same day slots and go ahead and put patients on schedules. And the outcome was that patients were able to be seen. There were a significant reduction in those missed opportunities, and it really improved access for that clinic. So that just say yes policy is definitely something worth considering if your organization is really struggling.
Yeah. And the only other example that I'll share is a personal one of what we did at my clinic, because I managed the nurses in my clinic whenever I was there, and poor them, I was on my DPI team. So I started to like get more information about like how all this stuff works. And I have a tendency to go a little bit rogue. But what we started doing, and I share this example in case anybody can kind of take this and run with it, is basically we made sure that the nurses knew how to do an MA intake. And this is really important, because basically what often happens when you're doing triage is the nurse will do a workup and will figure out, yes, we're going to see this patient. And then the MA will still go do a workup before the patient sees their provider, right? And so what we started doing is anytime we got called for a triage, in addition to all the access things we were doing to decrease our missed opportunities, is if we were going to do a workup with a patient, we did the entire MA intake so that the patient didn't have to go through another MA intake and the provider could go in directly with them. And that was a super easy way to really decrease the amount of overdoing it, if you will, and kind of, you know, making duplicative systems. And it helped us to really start to pull our nurses from doing that kind of stuff and doing things that are really much more interesting and a better use of their skills. So basically, what if I was a listener, what I would take away from this, and you all feel free to chime in here if you want, is really that unless you are actively doing it for a disease process that is going through your community, right? Like COVID is the classic example. But, you know, if you're having like a flu outbreak or something and you need triage, like that's not what we're talking about getting rid of. I think we have a couple health centers that are also like connected to a hospital. And so like, if you have to do some of that stuff to get people into the right place and right level of care. But what we're really talking about here is thinking about a triage process that is actually like, you know, if you were to look behind the curtain of the triage process, it's really just nurses trying to find appointments for patients, right? And if you have a triage process like that, really look at how could you slowly, what's the language you used, Amanda, where you can kind of slowly put them out of business?
Put them out of business. Yeah.
And so if you had to take away three things that you would do to put triage out of business, what would you say?
One, I would create pull to see patients today, like actively reduce missed opportunities by jockeying and figuring out if you can fill the slot of someone who's going to be a no-show or something that's not filled or something that reschedules last minute, and like accept anyone today by putting them in the slots. Or if you don't have anyone in, pulling patients from the various places patients are hiding, like tomorrow in their schedule or next week in the schedule. I mean, Tim Spurrell on our team says the schedule is a wait list. And so that is a bucket of which you could draw upon of a place patients could be pulled from to see them earlier. And just find those different places where they're hiding that's not today, pull them into today and start reducing those missed opportunities. You asked for three things. That was one.
Yeah. All right. You did one. Now, I think we should let Sheree go because it's a little bit of a disadvantage to go after you.
Yeah. I would say just make sure that you're looking at data, collecting data, and really understanding where your opportunities lie, right? So look at your third next available appointment, right? How far out are you scheduling? That is the number one indicator for great access or poor access. Can your patients get in a timely manner? And then the flip side of that is looking at those missed opportunities that Adrian talked about earlier. So if you're scheduling several weeks out, but you have a high number of missed opportunities, you've got a ton of opportunity there. And that's what really, I guess, in a data-driven way helps you evaluate the effectiveness of your system. So look at third next available and missed opportunities.
If I was going to do a third one, what I would say is if you find that you're in a situation where you have a high third next available, like Sheree is saying, and you have high missed opportunities at the end of the day, but if you look at your schedules, they are jam-packed. My first thing that I would do that is very low barrier to entry is I would send out personalized text messages to my patients asking if the time for their appointment still works for them. So let me give you a script. I would say, hi, Amanda, this is Adrian. I work at Happy Little Clinic and I work really closely with your provider, Sheree. I see you have an appointment tomorrow at 2:00. Does this time still work for you? Even if you're sending it out as an automated message, as long as you can get text back from patients, that is the first thing I would do to try and find those patients that aren't coming so that you can start to see where those missed opportunities are. All right. Thank you so much to Sheree and Amanda for hopping on. They have both been on site a bunch in the last couple of weeks. And so this is probably a little bit tiring for them, but I'm so glad to have their fresh perspective from seeing things at organizations. And I think this is, you know, kind of that next level of where you can take your performance improvement, but also it really helps to address the staffing crises that I think everyone is experiencing it by not just trying to hire your way out of it, but really thinking about how you can use staff differently and build your processes differently. So make sure that you like and subscribe to the Coleman Associates Innovation Podcast so that you never miss an episode. If you or someone you know should be interviewed for an episode, just shoot us an email at notify@ColemanAssociates.com or reach out to us on social media. I'd also love to hear about what you thought about the podcast. And to make sure that you're keeping up with all the CHISPA happenings, follow us on LinkedIn. I think that there are some recent Halloween pictures that are coming out on our different social medias. And I have to say the CHISPAs are very creative with their costumes. And a big shout out to Nikolai for all of his podcasting help. We'll see you next time.